WBEZ Chicago. It's time now for Inside Politics, a program of political discussion and intrigue, with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, power brokers, and public servants. And your host is Bruce Dumont.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Inside Politics, offering you a Beyond the Beltway perspective of this week's political headlines, which are Clarence Thomas wins delayed confirmation vote, in case you missed that. Roe v. Wade attorney predicts that the new court will overturn Roe v. Wade. The Senate sustains President Bush's veto of extra aid for the unemployed. And Paul Tsongas and Senator Tom Harkin lead Democratic presidential candidates in the fundraising race. We'll discuss these matters a little bit later on. We'll also be asking the musical question, where was Jesse? Jesse Jackson, who's never met a microphone he did not love, for the last week has been relatively quiet, certainly prior to the vote, and he's been like a church mouse.
He ran out of heroic couplets.
We'll give each and every one
it
of our guests
contract.
Each and every one of our guests an opportunity to ask the question or answer the question, where was Jesse? And those guests this week include Thomas Roser, who is a former corporate lobbyist, a native of Minnesota insofar as his political career is concerned, and founder of the Republican Assembly of Illinois, and now a private consultant. Grace Kaminkowitz is here, a Democratic political consultant and a National Steering Committee member of the Women's Political Caucus and a freelance political columnist. Bruce Crosby is chairman of the Committee to Preserve Voting Rights and a longtime activist in African-American politics in the city of Chicago, where he is a native. And Cornelia Tewitt is here. She is an attorney in private practice, a former chief of staff for the City of Chicago's Finance Committee, former ethics counsel for the American Bar Association, and a former newspaper reporter. But we will not hold that against her.
That's her best credential.
Before we go too far with no one tell, let us say, and I'm sure I speak for everyone around the table this week, that we hope that Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, is doing well. He went to the hospital following the vote the other day. He became ill. Grace said that she became ill after the vote as well. She did not go to the hospital. Patrick Leahy did. He's been released. And according to his aide, she said, "I think the guy just went through too much."
I went and to the telephone, not the hospital.
You went through probably too much as well.
Yeah, but I went to the telephone to round up people to run against the senators I was unhappy with.
Right, and we'll be talking about that, most notably Senator Alan Dixon, the senior senator from Illinois, because I know that will be part of our discussion about Clarence Thomas.
Certainly.
As the program unfolds. But first, Know and Tell, that part of our program where we ask each guest to share with us for the very first time something that they know that they now want to tell. And we begin this week with Tom Roser, who last week on Know and Tell predicted, and predicted correctly, that the Senate interrogators, the Republican Senate interrogators, would use the fatal attraction defense against Anita Hill, and they did, and so America is waiting for your comment.
Oh, yeah. Finally got one right.
Bruce, at a time when there's kind of a poisonous spirit on Capitol Hill, a partisanship, the White House has offered a very significant post to Dan Rostenkowski were he to step down. And a number of posts have been offered to him, including one cabinet post and several ambassadorships. And it's expected at least tonight in the White House that the congressman, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, will in fact accept one or the other of these posts, including a significant cabinet post.
Excellent inside information. I had an opportunity in a television interview within the last 2 weeks to participate in an interview with Congressman Rostenkowski. And an extended conversation with him afterwards. And I would say that if the decision were to be made right now, that Dan Rostenkowski would hang him up, and he's ready to move on to other things, and that the congressional system is not something that is as exciting to him as it was in the previous years. So I am not totally flabbergasted if Dan Rostenkowski were to decide to do something else. And now, let's go to Cornelia Tewitt, who last week on this program, at the conclusion of the program, when we asked all of the guests to predict what would happen before the Senate Judiciary Committee, she was the only one to call it straight, suggesting that Clarence Thomas would be confirmed, and so we offer our congratulations for your excellent prognostication for accuracy, and now people are on the edge of their seat waiting for your insight this week.
Well, this relates to Alan Dixon, whom we will discuss this evening. He is planning to meet a week from this Saturday with the 30 Cook County Democratic committeemen up in the suburbs at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he was going to discuss his campaign, but what we absolutely expect is a bevy, perhaps a mass of women who will protest against Senator Dixon and ask him to explain why he voted for Clarence Thomas.
Is there anyone in that group who will stand up and challenge Alan Dixon in the primary
of the
next March?
Amongst
the committeemen? No, not the committeemen, but the women.
Amongst the women. Now, there's been discussions already of with Susan Getzendere.
Just a moment. I think that we may be stepping on another guest.
No intel.
So, Susan Getzendere, former federal judge.
Former federal judge and currently a lead partner at Skadden Arps, a very influential New York law firm which has offices all across the country. Susan probably, with the partners in her firm alone, including Wayne Whalen, for example, who and John Schmidt, can raise a ton of dough. She would be a formidable, elegant, and articulate candidate.
Okay, and we should mention that Wayne Whalen and John Schmidt, also John Schmidt, a very close political confidant of Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago. And Grace Kamenkiewicz, we now go to you with your know-and-tell.
Well, there are a lot of women who are going to challenge men who voted for Clarence
Thomas. Let's name names.
I don't think the women, I'm not going to name the women's
Why
names
not?
Because I think they deserve the courtesy of making the announcement themselves.
Why?
But I will tell you the four who have already stepped in, the four senators, incumbent senators who are going to be challenged.
And they are?
So far. I remember this is just 2 days after the vote.
Right.
They are John Breaux of Louisiana.
Okay.
Richard Shelby of Alabama.
Okay.
Frank Murkowski of Alaska, so it's bipartisan, and Alan Dixon of Illinois.
Okay. And you don't want to mention any name
well,
in Illinois.
In Illinois, I think, you know, Susan is one strong possibility because she can raise a lot of money, but there is a very strong movement for Carol Moseley Braun.
Carol Moseley Braun is the recorder of deeds in the County of Cook and the former
Assistant
Majority Leader in the Illinois House for many years and a former Assistant United States Attorney.
Right, and, a University of Chicago Law School graduate.
First African-American woman ever to win countywide office.
And if she defeated Mr. Dixon in the primary and won the election, she would be the first African-American woman in the Senate.
That is a significant leap.
Absolutely.
And we'll discuss that a little bit later on. Bruce Crosby, your know-and-tell.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and New Jersey Senator Joe Biden, Chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, have both joined together calling for fairness for Charles Cohen, a former candidate for governor. Joe Biden has sent a letter to the Bureau of Prisons complaining about Dr. Cohen's treatment. He's currently in the federal penitentiary. And Minister Louis Farrakhan is holding a major rally in St. Louis at the largest indoor arena, the St. Louis Arena. It holds 17,000 people to raise funds for the appeal for Charles Cohen.
But you're not expecting Joe Biden to attend this function by Minister Louis Farrakhan, are you?
I doubt it very seriously.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify. My role to ask follow-up questions. Now, I would like to talk a little bit more, but first I want to give Tom an opportunity to respond to the suggestions in the No One Tells by Cornelia and Grace, and more suggestions, more suggestive than in Grace's, that Alan Dixon is going to be challenged. Do you believe that Alan Dixon is quivering in his boots this evening?
Yes.
Tom.
I talked to Alan Dixon, and Alan Dixon is not quivering, although he's certainly not very sanguine about it. I think it's fair to say that Susan Getzendener, although she's beloved by feminists, would be the easiest person to beat because of her peerless role as a very fine public relations spokesman for Commonwealth Edison. which in fact has done her so much good that people are all set to march counter her in that thing. So it would be expected that possibly Alan Dixon would like to have Susan Getzendener really run. If in fact anyone runs, he would probably choose her.
I don't know that he can choose. I think that Grace Mary Stern is not going to. I think is an excellent candidate.
But she is
candidate.
Not going to do it.
I don't be so sure.
I spoke with her this morning.
And she will not do it?
She will not do it.
Well, who's going to do it, Grace? Who are the other names?
I'll tell you what's happening right now. There is a poll has been commissioned to see which of the potential women candidates will come out the strongest in the poll. And that person most likely will be the one who will get the support of the women's community anyway. It is my feeling that that person will show as, of the Democratic primary voter, will show as Carol.
Well, you know, I think the problem is that the Senate is an all-white club, and that's a serious problem. I anticipate opposition to Alan Dixon, but not from a black Democrat or a black Republican, but I look forward to seeing the Harold Washington Party put up a candidate against Dixon in the general election.
That's interesting. Who would that be, do you suppose?
Well, it's still up in the air. I think there are a lot of potential candidates out there, and I think that's one of the things that the party has to consider. They wouldn't have to file their petitions until August to run against Dixon, so they have a lot of time to watch the Democratic primary and to develop a strategy based on that. Carol Moseley Braun would be a great candidate, but her bucking the system is kind of out of character. She's probably the best candidate in the black community for mayor, but she refuses to buck the system.
However, she certainly isn't very silent at this point about Mr. Dixon.
Yeah, and I can tell you since the last time I spoke with her was 2 hours ago that she's ready to go. She is that angry. And she's been that ready to go. She has received phone calls from that many people. Now, let me ask you a question.
Now, we should mention, by the way, for those of who are not up to date on Carol Moseley Braun's track record, she has what appears to be a lock on renomination for Recorder of Deeds and a relatively easy win in the County of Cook, although it might be tougher than in her previous election. So what you're talking about is someone who has an easy track and who in the past has said that her goal is Congress.
Washington, that's right. Now, what I would like to know, Bruce, is let's do a hypothetical. Carol runs against Alan Dixon and, wonder of wonders, beats him in the primary because of a number of different reasons. But she beats him. And Gary McDougal or some other,
All right, let's move on. It's possible.
All right. Gary McDougal or some other nondescript Republican runs against her. Would the Harold Washington Party field a black candidate against in that field?
I would hope so. I think one thing that the Harold Washington Party has to understand, if they're going to be a political party, that they have a party that has to run, no matter who's on the Democratic side. And the mistakes that the party has made in the past is they have said that some Democrats were their friends,
a la
Roland Burris.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, Grace, and also I want to get Cornelia's response as well. All of the public opinion polls suggest that the public believed Clarence Thomas and supported Clarence Thomas over Anita Hill. And I would assume that Illinois isn't too far afield of what is the general thinking throughout the country, and I have not seen a specific poll in Illinois, but I would suggest that the poll in Illinois would be in step with the rest of the country. What makes you think there is a significant number of people out there, other than those who happen to believe exactly as you believe in the women's agenda, what makes you think there's a pool of people out there that would rally to anyone who challenged Alan Dixon, who appears to be, as he generally is, in step with the American people?
Yeah, I think what he did was he made his final determination on how to vote after he put his finger to the wind and saw what the polls were saying the morning, Tuesday morning.
All right, now speak to the arithmetic of what I've just said.
Yeah, I think that arithmetic is a little misleading. It turned out that way largely, I think, because the Democrats failed to make the case. They let the Republicans bully them and bully Anita Hill. And it was no surprise to me.
But the American people saw all that on television. Everybody saw that, and they made a
determination.
They bought it. and they bought it. Now, what makes you think that in a short amount of time between now and the Illinois primary on March 17th, the American people or the people of Illinois are going to have this massive change in thought?
I happen to agree with you, Bruce, because first of all, what we have seen, unfortunately, continuously in the Democratic Party, is that it is splintered. It is, it has to serve, far too many masters. It doesn't have a unified, cohesive plan. Women, unfortunately, you know, Grace, you know, with all due respect, to your view, I don't see a unified, cohesive women's organization in the state of Illinois. I don't see it in Cook County. I don't see it, realistically anywhere. I mean, there are women who are out there who, certainly have very strong views. But I honestly don't believe there is a bandwagon of people who are going to go against Alan Dixon.
Grace and then Tom.
Okay. I think what will happen once the case starts being made and the campaign starts is the same thing that happened a week ago when the vote was postponed. People will start calling. You know, the vote was postponed because people called their senators and said, "You can't do this."
Yeah, well, people called Alan Dixon, and he did what the majority of people who
that's
called
right,
him
and told him
did.
Don't. That's right,
Tom.
Bruce, Senator Shelby
finished.
Of Alabama has had a series of meetings today, as a matter of fact, talking to Democrats, saying that the Democratic Party is really very foolish to have allowed this thing to splinter them, because the great attack on George Bush, the valid attack, the attack which in fact could defeat Bush, is economic. And that Shelby points out that, as a matter of fact, so-called women's groups, which do not reflect all women but are called euphemistically women's groups,
just
have
as blacks
caused,
are all lumped
have
into
caused
one group.
The party to shatter to a point where they are certain to be losers. And generally speaking, Shelby is saying that it's time for Mitchell to step down because Mitchell himself has been an architect of this very disastrous
campaign.
We need
to look at Alan Dixon's record. He voted more with Reagan than any Democrat.
Absolutely.
He's voted more with Bush than any Democrat. And Bush owes him grace. And Bush is going to make sure that the Republicans don't field a strong candidate against
him.
Right. Additionally, the white women's organizations on this issue have proved to be real hypocrites. They came out and they supported Sandra Day O'Connor when she publicly was opposed to abortion. But when a black man had the opportunity to go on the Supreme Court, they opposed him on the abortion question.
Might I object to lumping all white women into one group? I think that's grossly unfair. The National Eagle Forum is a white woman's organization. Sloppy thinking that is killing this country that thinks that we
just the
are...
the Democratic Party, Cornelia, not the country.
No, it is. It's very harmful for the country because everybody, you know, you sit here, you're a black man, I'm a white woman. I don't like to think, and I think this is just so fundamentally wrong, and I think it's one of the things that bothered many Americans in this conference. Wait a minute, just let me finish my thought, all right?
Go ahead, finish on.
And that is that you think all blacks are either liberals or they... Or they're not black somehow, and that all women instantly went along with Anita Hill. We are all a group of individuals. We all speak with different voices. We all react differently. It is perfectly conceivable for me as a white woman to have the same views as a black man.
You know, Cornelia,
what
the
are
same
we talking about? We
okay.
just want
I'm
to
about
lump people into little groups.
White women's organizations. What about
but
white Republican women's organizations who, in fact, were behind her?
For example,
don't you ever imagine the Republican Party
exists? I specifically
exists?
Said
well,
that.
I don't even know they exist.
Yeah, and if you're going to take now the outgoing... That's not a white woman's organization.
Well, it's controlled by white women.
Oh, not the outgoing president of the local...
One at a time, Grace.
The outgoing president of the local chapter is a black woman.
What about nationally? Who speaks for the organization nationally?
That's
the problem.
You know, there's something called democracy that allows people...
Everybody back. Now, would you acknowledge, in response to Cornelia's statement, that amongst all groups... there are conservatives and there are liberals, whether they're Republican women, Democratic women, white women, Hispanic women, Jewish women.
Absolutely.
And especially in the black community. And is this not one of the lessons that the body politic now can sit back and say, you know what? not all blacks are liberals.
No, it's not.
You were for Clarence Thomas.
Right, and I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a liberal. Okay?
Right.
Now, let's be clear. You know, the problem with the United States Senate is all those white men don't want to talk about race. And the problem is the issue of race is something that people don't want to discuss in America.
Then why don't you elect a black senator?
So when Cornelia, we're going to do that soon.
Yeah, we are.
Where?
In Illinois.
Carol Braun.
Okay. So, be still my heart.
Go ahead.
So when those white men had to deal with Clarence Thomas as a man, they had problems. Never would that kind of information be leaked on a white man.
What about Gary Hart? What would a white man have to go through with
Clarence Thomas?
On the issue of the leak, let's talk about the leak. And let's go right around the table real quickly. And just give me a quick yes or no, and then you can elaborate on it. Will the leaker of the information ever be known, Grace?
Quite possibly, and I think it is a woman on Arlen Specter's staff.
Sigh, pregnant pause.
Cornelia Tewitt, that's sort of something I suggested last week on this program.
You
did? No, not Cornelia. No, I didn't suggest that it was on any particular senator's staff. I did suggest that the leaker, although the average person, the perception is that it was a member of a liberal member of the Senate or his or her staff. It could be the other way around. You never know until you know. My question at the moment is, will we eventually know who the leaker was, Cornelia?
I think so, yes.
Tom?
Yes, definitely.
Bruce?
No.
Okay. Now, a little more elaboration on the role of the leaker in what turned out to be what some have described as a travesty. How much is the leaker a good guy or a good woman or a bad woman at this point, in your view, Grace?
Well, I don't like illegal activities, and I guess it is an illegal activity, so I have to say it was not good.
Tom?
It is a man, and it's on Senator Paul Simon's staff, pietistic Paul.
You think?
That's right.
We don't have, okay.
I mean, there's some laws that might want to.
Yeah. But pietistic Paul was
great speculation. Again,
we'll be glad to find someone to take Howard Metzen bounds.
Good person or bad person, Cornelia?
Well, there's two ways of answering this. One, I think that somebody breached a fiduciary.
That's why I asked you because you're a lawyer.
I think you'd
give us.
She used the word fiduciary, which proves she is a lawyer. Right. Well, 10 minutes.
So I could be a banker too.
No, I was going to say. We asked a lawyer, and we knew that you could talk out of both sides of your mouth to answer this question. And you were the one that said there are two answers to this question.
Yeah. And they're absolutely hard. Right. I will argue any side you any side you want to pay me to argue. I mean,
go ahead.
What
okay.
the hell?
Go ahead.
Here's my view. I think that when you have a fiduciary duty as a member of the Congress to keep those things which are confidential, and we do that in a host of other circumstances. And so in that sense, I think the breach of the fiduciary duty is wrong. I think we had a system that is designed to keep so that we can handle confidential information. As it turns out, you know, this same system, this same kind of information arises with every other candidate for the federal judiciary. It arises also here in the Chicago Bar Association when we evaluate candidates for judicial selection. On the other hand, when you look at what we had an opportunity to discuss and to consider and to see as a result of these hearings. Now, there was great personal anguish to Ms. Hill and to Clarence Thomas. On the other hand, we, as a nation, started to talk about race. We, as a nation, started to talk about sexual harassment. I don't know, WBZ. Nobody's made up their mind which word it is.
We don't have to wait for WBZ.
Right. No, but this morning.
It's optional.
furthermore, we had an opportunity to... I don't think the process of discussing our deepest problems is wrong. I am a great believer in democracy. I am a great believer in discussions. I think there is something very valuable to come out of this, and there are a lot of negatives, but there are a lot of valuable things to come out.
In moving this issue, the issue of sexual harassment and race as well, in deciding to move that to the public agenda, there was a violation of trust.
Exactly.
And what transpired, which many have described as a travesty, and many have described as an example of what happens to a woman when she steps forward and claims sexual harassment.
What happens to a black man?
That question can be asked, but the other question can be asked is, was not the conduct of the senators, the Republican senators who interrogated Anita Hill, that was a reaction to the action of the leaker. And a woman who wants to come forward and is fearful that if she does, she will be lambasted by prosecutors, must also fear, and I think the fear is even greater, to come forward to the police agency, which in this case was the Judiciary Committee, because they can't keep a secret. Bruce.
The leak was wrong. It was a racist maneuver that would never be done on a white man. But there was a black man and a black woman there. The white liberals saw an opportunity to do just what they thought George Bush had did with the appointment, and that split the black community and raised the question of race where white leaders in this country can't deal with in public.
I would argue that as a desperate move, whether you were Republican, Democrat, liberal, or conservative, a desperate move is caused when there absolutely is no other choice. And they looked at the vote, and they knew they were going down, and it was the one last grasp for the ring, and they did it, and that's what caused it.
And it's paranoia to think that they would do it only to a black man, and I heard black women saying they would do it only to, they would abuse only a black woman, and let me tell you, they don't believe white women who have suffered sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. So it is absolutely colorless.
Sexual harassment was not the issue. One that had been
Bruce, believability and beating up on was.
The statute of limitations had expired on that issue.
Well, she didn't file a charge,
right,
for heaven's sake.
It
was all about winning. It had nothing to do with about sex or race. That's right.
Week.
It was about winning, no holds barred.
Down. Down. This week on Inside Politics, Tom Roser, Grace Kamikowitz, Bruce Crosby, and Cornelia Tewitt. I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Inside Politics coming to you from Chicago on the Inside Politics Radio Network.
You're listening to Inside Politics on WBEZ Chicago. You're invited to join in the discussion by calling us now at 372-0500.
Inside Politics continues from Chicago, and Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Bruce, how you doing?
Fine.
I enjoyed Bruce Crosby's point. And, Bruce, I enjoyed your point last night on Chicago Tonight about the fact that the Democrats start fights, but they can't finish them, and they cry foul when they start them. I find it unbelievable that the whining, weeny liberals are talking about how this woman, Anita, was treated. All Spector did was cross-examine her.
And accuse her of perjury.
Well, that's right, and she did.
Oh!
And not only that, I think we're missing the basic issue, okay?
Which is,
namely, why the Senate has deluded itself into thinking that it has a co-equal role with the president in deciding these nominations.
That's exactly right. The caller is exactly right. Not only have Madison and Hamilton and all kinds of statements and all kinds of letters and all kinds of correspondence suggested that it is not a co-appointive thing. This is a usurpation and the most flagrant, wretched, I think, torturous view of constitutionality. It is absolutely something which is a usurpation, and they will deserve what they shall get.
Thank you, Mr. Legal Scholar.
The Senate does not have the role of a co-appointer of
Grace.
This thing.
Oh, it is absolutely ridiculous. Even a simple reading of the Constitution and some history will tell you that. I'm sorry, let me finish, Mark.
Words of the Constitution. The president appoints, and with the advice and consent.
Absolutely. And the president hasn't bothered asking for any advice, and so if they don't want to...
Mark. Let Grace talk.
The president hasn't bothered asking for any advice. He has been very willful in his appointments, and therefore, if the Senate wants to withhold its consent, it is well within its bounds to do that.
Mark.
That's true, but normally
thank you.
The precedent has been that the president has been given wide latitude in his choices, and the Senate has confined itself to asking about character, judicial temperament, and qualifications.
And scholarship.
And the Senate can change
and
its
scholarship.
Mind any time it so desires, because they have done that in the past. Well, this is a living body, a living constitution, and if the Senate decides that it wants to flex its muscle, which it is granted by the words of the Constitution, what do advise and consent mean, and you just agreed with Grace, then that means it has a co-equal. It has a veto power here. That's what's intended.
Cornelia, this will not be a living constitution very long after you and your liberal friends get through wrenching it out of its own existence.
After
now,
you,
tell you
and your conservatives destroy
said,
it.
That is absolutely as foolish as pietistic Paul has ever done. And that is that somehow he points out that Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover and Dwight Eisenhower have named Democrats, and why, in fact, shouldn't we do that again? The fact is the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in those days, especially under Hoover, were almost exactly alike. They had no ideological difference, and so consequently, pietistic Paul, a country slicker, has again misled us.
I have no interest in Paul and President Bush appointing a Democrat, if you want the truth, but I would like him to appoint somebody who is far better qualified and who isn't going to polarize the court totally. And that's what you have failed to grasp. What you're doing and what your president is doing is using litmus tests, and he's using abortion as the litmus test, because in 1980 you Republicans put it in your platform and you have carried out mandate.
I got a problem with you saying that Clarence Thomas is not qualified. I would agree that the president should look for other opinions. He should look for Democrats. There should be another opinion. I mean, the justice should have some debate. And I think that's essential in the courts.
Absolutely.
But let's not start talking about qualifications, because that's something I noticed, and I think that's kind of racist. When you deal
that's
with this
not everything is racist.
Well,
Bruce, you can't say racist if everyone disagrees with you.
I can't say what is racist.
No, wait a minute. Just because we disagree, it doesn't on race grounds.
One at a time, Bruce.
I can say what's racist
to me, doing, then
that's
you are the using
now.
The issue.
You
are
to start listening
hold
to black
hold,
people
hold.
More.
That
hold.
Is
a
No, listen, we don't want to make light of the whole thing. You know,
he's got a mean left hook, Eddie.
It's hard to bite your tongue and not make the pee-wee jokes, but when you see how serious things have gotten, you know, imagine if your career was dashed on the rocks just because people, you know, found out you and that farmyard thing that happened the one time. You know, Jumbo, so...
Yeah, I understand.
So,
is Bruce Dumont running around there yet?
I haven't seen him. He's been hiding. We thought we saw him once, but I don't think so. So I don't know if he'll be available for comment here or if he'll take action based on the people that have shown up and showed their support down here this morning.
God, that's great. Celebrities coming down, co-workers, all kinds of... It's been a ball.
It's been great that people drop by and honk their horns and, you know, just give us a thumbs up or whatever, even if one really hideous bag went by and gave a thumbs down and said, he's disgusting. But, you know, there's one of those in every crowd.
Hey, even if he's found guilty, a museum still doesn't have a right to censor history.
Yeah, it doesn't have any, you know, if the person, Paul Rubens, is found guilty, yeah, you know. That's like if the guy that draws Mighty Mouse, you know, did something wrong.
Yeah, you don't
accusing
take
the character,
Mighty Mouse.
You know.
Hey, listen, I don't even care that he did what he did in the movie theater. Big deal.
If in fact he denies those charges. You
he
know,
still
the bottom
has
line.
A place in broadcast history in a museum.
Who cares?
What do we have pornography for?
That's what it's for.
We don't want to open the floodgates here and set the precedent. That's the problem here. So.
All right, Eddie, we appreciate it, buddy. 800 right. South Wales. You're going to be there till what, by 9 o'clock?
Yeah, we're going to hang around a little while longer.
All right, we're going to take right now call 9 and 10 at 591-9696. B96 has what they call New Music Night, Saturday night. If you want to go, check out some of Chicago's freshest acts. It's going to be a ball. 591-9696, call 9 and 10. We go to Buffalo Grove for a meaty confession right after Karen.
Cloudy by this afternoon, up to 83 for a high. Right now it's 69 degrees in northern Indiana, 70 at Midway and O'Hare, and 71 downtown. Say 25 at B96, just how expensive it is to raise your kids, and Elvis still alive. Coming up.
Yummy, 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 I had a cookie in my tummy. It's a fun new snack to eat. Koala yummy. It's a crispy and a crunchy. It's a chocolate milk munchie. It's a great new bite-sized treat. Koala yummy. It's a new and different cookie with chocolate cream.
bite-sized cookies kids love to eat. Come to the store where moms love to shop, Dominic's. Not only will you find koala yummies down the cookie aisle, but you'll find dozens of other great values throughout the store, including farm-fresh produce, delectable deli items, quality meats and seafoods, savory bakery goods, fresh dairy products, health and beauty care items, and more. Save on koala yummies and all your family's favorite foods at Dominic's. No one knows cookies and savings like Dominic's.
Koala yummies! Koala yummies!
Say 26. Believe it or not, it's cheaper to raise kids in Chicago and other big cities in the Midwest than urban areas anyplace else in the country. It's cheaper because housing is cheaper in the Midwest than other parts of the country. But before you rush off to the bedroom, consider a baby born last year in Chicago will cost his or her parents anywhere from $151,000 to $293,000 between now and the age of 17. You know the luggage carts at the airport that you have to pay for and then you get some money back when you return the carts? Well, how would you feel about having to do the very same at the grocery store? You already have to if you shop at the Dominic's on North Damon or Omni in Melrose Park in Crestwood. You have to pay a quarter to get your shopping cart out of a locking system, and then you get the quarter back if you return the cart. Lots of customers already say it's a real hassle, and they might look for other stores to buy their groceries, but there's a pretty good chance this quarter shopping cart system will be at all grocery stores in time. Advisors to Jesse Jackson say he does not plan to run for president next year, that he'll concentrate on his CNN talk show and his job as shadow senator of Washington, D.C. instead. To hear Jesse tell it, though, he still hasn't made up his mind completely. Party boats on Lake Michigan ought to have a midnight curfew. So says Alderman Burton Nateras. He's calling for the curfew because his constituents at Lake Point Tower complain that the noise from the party boats is just too much to deal with. Detroit beat her Sox twice yesterday, 11-9 in the first game and 4-3 in the second. And the Sox have to take on the Tigers in Detroit again today. Montreal beat the Cubs 7-6, and the Cubs host the Expos again this afternoon. Are there things in your life that make you really mad?
Yes.
Express yourself at a seminar on anger at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. It's August 26th, but call the hospital, Jobo, because registration is required.
The line's busy. I'll be off in a minute, okay?
It's 828 at B96.
Hello, folks. Frank Bisani here for Chicago's Festa Italiana, August 16th, 17th, and 18th in beautiful Grant Park on Lakeshore Drive and Roosevelt Road across from the Field Museum. Park at Soldiers Field, then take the free shuttle to Festa's entrance. If you're flying in, fly American Airlines like our headliners, Helen Reddy, Julius LaRosa, Freddie Bell, and a host of others too enumerated to expectorate. Come fill your bonza with great Italian food. Quench your thirst with Coors Light, Royal Crown Cola, or your favorite bowl of wine. Kids will love our free pony rides and animal farm, and there's mini golf for the whole family sponsored by the Falbo Cheese Company. This year we also welcome American Express, AT&T, and the Chicago Tribune. Festa Italiana, August 16th, 17th, and 18th in Grant Park. Tickets are $6 at the gate, $5 in advance at all Dominic and Butera food stores. Mass Sunday, August 18th at 1 p.m. And good night, Christopher Columbus, wherever you are.
Say 29, B96 shadow traffic for the world's most dangerous drivers. Coming down the Edens from Lake Cook, 27 minutes. Kennedy from the airport, 27. Ike from Route 53, an hour. Stevenson from the Tri-State, 51. Ryan from the Merge, 23. Calumet to the Ryan's, 19 minutes. I-57 to the Ryan, 20. Lakeshore Drive, southbound's 23 minutes. Northbound's wide open. Tri-State's 34. North-South Route 53 combo 38 minutes. East-West Tollway to the Ike 33 and Northwest Tollway to the Kennedy 33. But at Meacham, there's an accident blocking the left lane. Cloudy by this afternoon, up to 83 for a high. Right now it's 70 degrees. It's 8:29. Do you think Elvis is still alive? Well, that question's going to be explored again tonight in depth in the syndicated program The Elvis Files tonight at 7 on Channel 9.
His very own Channel 9.
Bill Bixby's the host of it, and in the report, Bill Bixby confesses he does think Elvis is still alive. For you non-believers, though, Friday is the 14th anniversary of his death.
And there's going to be stupid, belligerent people who will fall for that scam and watch it tonight during ratings sweep time.
I'll probably watch. That's what's going down. I'm Karen Hand with Eddie and Jobo on the Killer B, B96.
Every Wednesday, we open the pub here at about 5:30. You guys can come up to the bar here and order non-alcoholic drinks if you want at 591-9696 and fess up. Jeff Miller of Oak Forest, he's going to B96 New Music Night Saturday night at the China Club featuring Salt and Pepper. And from Naperville, Tony Sorrow, she's going to be there. She's going to be at the Vic, where Marky Mark, who is Donnie Wahlberg's baby brother, is going to be playing for B96 New Music Night, along with a lot of Chicago's freshest music acts. Eddie, my partner's on the road this morning. He's out there protesting.
at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 800 South Wells. Go join it. Right now we go live to Buffalo Grove. Yes, your voice is being disguised here at Eddie and Jobo's. It's the Mad Housewife. Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you? I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Doing great. Thank you.
I wanted to say, Eddie, I support you all the way. There's no question about that. We all have our kinks, don't we?
What is your kink?
My kink, and I haven't struck in about 2 years, I've been behaving myself, is I was at your favorite grocery store in Buffalo Grove, and the butcher just brought out fresh ground meat. Oh, I couldn't tell you. I could not resist. I went and poked my fingers at all those packages.
You remember this bag? This bag strikes about once a year.
For those new to the show, tell how
you get your rocks off.
The cold clamminess of the fresh ground meat. It just turns me on. And I happen to be shopping for a party that I'm having this weekend, and he brought out this whole big tray of it, and I just couldn't resist.
Well, buy it and take it home and make meatloaf, but don't poke your fingers in my meat.
No, I had to do it at the store because it's all the thrill of getting caught and everything. I just love it.
You have long fingernails.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do? You just poke them in the package?
Poke them in the package, move my fingers around a little, you know.
Why do you enjoy doing that?
Well, she's not alone because I don't shop at that store, and there are people who poke their fingers in hamburger meat at the store I shop at, too. Yeah, I see it all the time. I don't buy the ones that have holes poked into them.
I just love it.
How much meat did you ruin yesterday?
Oh, at least $70 worth.
Oh.
Man, you are kinky.
I always thought it was little kids coming by doing that.
How old are you?
35.
whatever pops your core.
It sure does, I tell you.
I hope the butcher's listening, and they're going to put some kind of a thing over there at the Buffalo Grove store that you're at.
Nah.
They had to put a security camera by the meat section.
Really?
That's that lady. The Killer Bee, B96 in Chicago, 832.
The wind is moving, and I am standing still. A life of pages, waiting to be filled. A heart that's hopeful, a head that's full of dreams. But this becoming is harder than it seems. Feels like I'm looking for a reason.
Lots of ways cold air can get into your home, but you can help stop it with energy-saving supplies from True Value Hardware Stores, like easy-to-apply 3M insulation kits that keep drafts out and the warm air in. The patio door insulation kit, just $8.99, installs on the inside using a hairdryer and special double-stick tape. The 3M 5-window insulation kit from True Value Hardware Stores also shrinks tight and wrinkle-free, and is just $9.99. And when you buy 2 5-window kits, you can use the enclosed mail-in certificate to get a free sports bag from 3M. It's a regular $15 value. So be prepared for the cold air. You can do it when you use winterizing supplies from participating True Value hardware stores and home centers. Take it from me, Pat Summerall. Shop at True Value, where they always offer True Values and personal service.
Scattered sprinkles ending, then clearing overnight, low in the mid-40s. Thursday, sunny and cooler, high in the lower 60s. Thursday night, increasing cloudiness and cold, low around 40. Friday, mostly cloudy Friday and cool, high in the lower 60s. 64 now at the lakefront, 63 at Midway, 59 officially at O'Hare Field, 42% humidity, north wind 14 miles an hour, barometer 30.07 and steady, waves on the lake 2 to 3 feet, water temperature 57 degrees. That's WGN News. I'm Dick Sutliff. Now let's turn it back over to Chicago Eddie Schwartz.
I was just, see
how I vamped for you there?
Huh? It's funny. I was on the phone, got a call tonight, a complete surprise, from a wonderful young lady that I used to date who I haven't seen in like 7 years.
Hmm.
She called up to say hello.
She had the 7-year itch, maybe?
I hope so. She said, I think she's happily married now, but it was just great. We were just sitting here gossiping for the last 5 minutes. We went out for about a year, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful person, and I haven't talked to her in so long.
You were so engrossed in that, you almost forgot to play the commercial.
I almost did. I was asking her 20 questions, including was she happily married, and the answer was yes. But
oh, too bad.
But here's the freaky part of it, okay? When we were dating, she was a real estate salesperson and a very good one. And I thought by now she'd be one of those, you know, zillion-dollar-a-year real estate people you read about in the paper. And every Sunday when I read the real estate section, and I do, I was always looking for her photo as one of those agents or brokers who, you know, was outstanding in his or her office. Never, ever, ever saw her picture. And then out of the blue, a couple of weeks ago, her little brother called up on the program here to say hello. A young man who's not so little anymore, but one that I hadn't seen her talk to in about 6 or 7 years. And I said, how's your sister? And he said to me, well, she's a policeman now, a police officer. And I couldn't believe that. Because she was, I just could never envision her on the police department. And sure enough, that's where she works. And I just talked to her, and she was on a lunch break at the police department here in Chicago. And I was asking 29,000 questions, and I hope I, you know, can bump into her again and just say hello. But just, it's just amazing where people go, what lines of work they choose, how they end up that you'd never, ever suspect. For example, the gang that I went to high school with, most of the crazy, obnoxious, antisocial kind of, I don't mean, they weren't delinquents. They were not delinquents. They were just characters. Most of the characters from my neighborhood all ended up as good people, and they ended up as police officers, and some of them have done quite well.
I had a friend of mine who I worked with in Indiana, a fellow disc jockey at the time. Crazy, I mean, just a wild and crazy sort of a guy. Wound up as an Indiana State Police trooper. Did his 20 years, is now retired, and I think he made sergeant and a few other things, became a big traffic accident specialist.
Ah.
And, you know, you just never know.
It's very impressive sometimes when you run into people. And I missed my last high school reunion, and for that I'm very angry with myself. Because some of the gang I went to school with have done so well for themselves, and I'm very pleased to see them turn out so well. I had a very bright class in high school. And most of them went on to college, I'd say 90%+. And many of them came out with some really stunning careers. So I'm very pleased for them. I was just picking up the morning paper. We got the morning papers in. Very startling story in the Morning Sun Times. I have the radio TV page out, and the headline in Robert Feeder's morning column, Bruce Dumont quits television. For museum duty, Bruce Dumont has resigned from Channel 11.
Whoa.
After all these years, let me read what it says.
How many years?
11 years on Channel 11. Bruce Dumont is, of course, the founder and president of the Chicago Museum of Broadcast Communications, which is expanding its horizons greatly by moving into the Chicago Cultural Center. Says here, Bruce, let me quote him, says, I appreciate all the opportunities that were provided to me by Bill McCarter and WTTW. They gave me an opportunity to communicate with the people of Chicago, an experience I've enjoyed. He will concentrate on the museum's move. He will continue his own radio show on WBEZ, but that's it. He's expected to make periodic guest shots on Channel 11. You know, that's kind of ironic. My guest tomorrow night, or tonight now, Thursday night, is John Calloway. I wonder how he'll react to all this. You know what? I've got Bruce's number in my file.
And I hate to admit it, but I've never been to the Museum of Broadcasting.
Oh, wonderful.
I gotta get out there sometime.
Let's wake Dumont up and tell the world.
Hello?
Bruce Dumont, please.
Yes, speaking.
We have a noisy phone line. Don't you pay your phone bill?
It sounds like Eddie Schwartz.
It is. How are you?
Hello, Ed. How are you?
Good. I'm going to dial you right back. This is a noisy line. Hang up. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Well, at least he wasn't asleep, huh? Let's see if we can do a little bit better.
Hello?
Bruce.
Yes, sir.
Bruce, I have the morning paper here with a headline that just shocked me. Dumont quits TV for museum duties.
true. It must be true. You read it in the paper.
Oh, wait a minute, Bruce. That's not you. That's somebody else that says Dumont quits TV because it charges us sexual harassment by over 1,500 employees of public television. Says there that you try to get them all to look at an X-rated pornographic political satire.
I think you've got your stories mixed up. You better check your wire machine.
You have really done it? You quit Channel 11? Boy, oh boy.
I have, and it is not an easy decision, but as you know, Ed, over the last several years with what I'm doing on radio on WBEZ and WTTW as political analyst for Chicago Tonight, and the tremendous growth of the Museum of Broadcast Communications and our future move to the Cultural Center on Michigan Avenue and the recent decision that we'll be able to take over and develop nationally the Radio Hall of Fame and the development of a political commercial archives in conjunction with Northwestern and the Chicago Sun-Times, that it is a fuller plate than ever before, and I think everybody reaches a point in life that they've got to decide, can they do everything that's on their plate? And the answer at the moment is something's got to come off the plate, and so I decided that since the museum is such an integral part of my life, that it requires my full-time attention at this moment, so I will do that, and fortunately, something's got to go, and so my full-time activity at WTTW will end soon.
What was John Calloway's reaction when you told him?
Well, I think John was a bit surprised by it, but I understand that he is going to be on with you tomorrow night, so probably get it straight from the horse's mouth tomorrow night.
Then I hope he cleans it up so it won't embarrass any of it.
No, he's been supportive over the years, and I think that it will. I will miss working with him on a regular basis, but who knows? In this crazy business, the possibility of an occasional guest shot might be a fact of life.
Will I still be able to call upon you for your political inside knowledge
well,
on
I
my
hope
program?
So. I may be dying to talk about it with somebody other than my inside politics audience, because I know you boom out to 38 states or more, and I know that over the last several years, whether it's conventions or dropping in on election night or just periodic drop-ins, getting a chance to sit down and chew the political fat with you is a lot of fun.
I think you will be, of course, the recipient of a large number of phone calls tomorrow or today asking you about this and what we've done and why and how could you, and you're going to be a busy little camper.
Well, it's the future of the museum is, is very, very bright, and the potential for the museum to be the best broadcast museum in America, I believe, is real. And I know our chairman, Art Nielsen, thinks that, and all of our board members think that, and the recent overture to move the museum to one of the best locations in the city, right on Michigan Avenue in the old public library, which is now the Cultural Center, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The museum is stepping uptown and going big league in a big way, and a lot of people helped to get it to that point, and I just think that with the potential of the museum and with these new endeavors, now is the time to lead full time, and that was the personal as well as career decision I made. It was not an easy decision to say goodbye to something that you love, like television.
I understand, because of the newspaper columns, that there will be certain things that they will be calling you back for, such as the Illinois lawmakers specials that you do. Is that going to be an accurate
right, as far as, well, these are all, I think a lot of the specifics, have to be ironed out, but those are some of the, at least, preliminary suggestions and comments that were made today. So we hope that those things happen. But again, it is the focus is on making the Museum of Broadcast Communications the best broadcast museum in America. And with the things that we've got going there, there's no doubt in my mind that we'll meet that goal.
When do you begin the move? How long will it take? And when do you expect to be open in your new spot?
I would suspect that we will be in our new home at the Cultural Center no later than June 1st of 1992. There will probably be an incremental move in, and some of the specifics about the move have yet to be ironed out because there's a lot of activity, and we will be part of a much broader cultural concept that is very, very exciting, and I hope that in the next several months I might be able to get a chance to stop over and talk about the broader issue, about the excitement that that cultural center, I think, will bring to the city of Chicago. And we're happy to be part of it.
And the guy that you hired to run it for you on a day-to-day basis is also very impressive.
Yes.
Now he's wondering who I'm talking about. Charlie
well, we
McCarthy.
We have a terrific staff.
Charlie McCarthy, of course.
Charlie McCarthy, that's right.
Uh-huh. Do you have Effie right. Clinker? Or is he in
occasionally, the, occasionally, you know, he just gives us lip service. But, I mean, it is an integral part. And
as long as he doesn't give you a termite.
That's right. And also as the other exciting thing that we're very happy about is landing the Radio Hall of Fame. There finally will be a place.
Emerson, huh?
Emerson has turned it over to us.
Ah.
We have, this was a plan that they began in 1988, and they had a series of induction ceremonies, and for a variety of reasons, most notably fiscal, they were unable to provide the home and the necessary recognition, permanent recognition, that normally would follow in induction ceremonies. And so after several months of negotiation, we were able to reach an agreement on the 20th of September to take over the Radio Hall of Fame. It will be called the Radio Hall of Fame. The Emerson name has been dropped. And it will be on the first floor of the Cultural Center when we open in 1992. It will include a nationwide nomination process so that radio broadcasters all over the United States will have opportunity to have input in the nomination process. We look forward to a public balloting, and we also look forward to an annual Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremonies in Chicago, so that like the Emmy Awards and the Oscars and the Grammys, radio will have its big night annually in Chicago.
Do you remember years ago there used to be an active chapter of the National Academy of Radio Arts and...
The Bruce.
Back!
And that's the hypocrisy. Down! Down!
That is an
down.
Exploitive...
That is
down.
The hypocrisy.
Bo! You're next. Bo, are you there?
He's lost his courage.
Bo, are you there? Bo don't know, I guess. he's gone.
We scared him off.
Steve, are you there?
Yes, this is Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment or a question and a comment really quick. I was wondering, I was noticing, I was talking to some female friends over the weekend about the Thomas hearings, and just about everyone, in fact, all of them said that they were behind Thomas. And I was noticing other women I've talked to have also said they were behind Thomas and against Anita Hill. And I was wondering, generally, have we been misinformed by thinking that all women or most women have been for Anita Hill?
And then maybe you should introduce Grace to some of your friends. Grace, what about this? I mean, again, this there is this perception that has been created by feminists and their friends in the media.
No, I told you right at the beginning of this show that I thought that the lily-livered presentation of the Democrats on
men.
The committee... men. Was such that it allowed that kind of perception, and that women who have been in the workplace and who have suffered harassment understand and accept Anita Hill's accusations and
you,
believe
and them. And you want a woman in the Senate. You're
oh, no, I want at least
the,
four or five
right kind
women
of woman
in the Senate.
Yeah, the right kind, because you have
well,
worked, you
I've
have,
already written my checks this week to well, I'm going to keep Mikulski.
But your most recent history in Illinois, Your most recent history in Illinois is you have worked against women who have run for high political office.
I have worked against
including
women.
Including the United States Senate and President.
I have worked against women who I thought would not represent my interests and would follow George Bush and vote for his Supreme Court nominee.
Is it not true that when Pat Schroeder was running for president, you had already committed to Paul Simon?
Right, and I did host.
Okay.
I
so
did
you
have
did not support Pat Schroeder and you did not support Lynn Martin against
I had given
Paul
my
Simon.
Word.
Okay.
Rosa, I think
words
the answer,
are important to keep.
I think the answer to the caller is that the reason we are somewhat misled in the media is an elitist group, generally speaking, and elites certainly try to represent that Anita Hill and all the people and all the feminists in the world represent the so-called women's movement. It is not the case. It is not the case whatsoever. Elites in the media have been twisting the story out of proportion, and when the poll is taken, lo and behold, the elites are in the minority, and they can't. All you have to do is see the petulant tantrums that the New York Times has waged today to find out that they are on the losing side. Women are not the way they would like them so devoutly to be.
Are you through, Tom?
Wouldn't it seem logical, since most of the media are men, that they would have slanted it in the other direction and not slanted it for Anita Hill, but they would have slanted it
I would. I would challenge that although many of the faces that you see on television are men, I would challenge your assumption that many of those that are in the news gathering and news writing positions at local and many of the network stations are not women who are avowed feminists.
It is not one of the last
and few bastions. It is a bastion of liberal political thinking almost across the board.
What was bothering me about Tom's response is what I was trying to explain earlier, is that what's wrong is that everybody thinks that people are that women are responding merely as women, and
as
that
mom.
If there is a woman who is accused, that all women will go to her, or if a black is accused, that all blacks will go to her, or that the liberal or that the press is entirely liberal. I think when you look at the coverage of this particular issue, you can see in the base facts any side that you want to see, and I think that was there.
Not
well,
with the elitist New York Times.
No,
but that's not the only newspaper.
We should point out, though, that Clarence Thomas' popularity raised in the black community when he stood up there and raised those issues of race and took on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Gave a wonderful defense. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant.
And his
brilliant.
Popularity raised
it was
across the community.
Absolutely brilliant,
and
Bruce.
And it's fair to
it
say, and I think you'll agree, Bruce, that the first stage of the go-round, Clarence Thomas was not as effective as the second stage when, in fact, he wrote it and defended himself, which shows you that the White House really misguided this guy and gave him a lot of softballs.
I want to quickly go back to something you said, Grace, a little while ago, and then we've got to get calls because we've got lots of calls this week on our program. You suggested a few moments ago, about maybe 10 minutes ago, that you thought the leaker was someone on Arlen Specter's staff. Why do you think that, and why did you say that?
I cannot reveal my source.
But someone told you that they leaked, or is this a rumor, or how specific can you be?
I can only tell you that I have it on what you reporters would call good authority, that everyone is looking in the wrong direction, and that it was a woman on Specter's staff who was unhappy with the role he was playing, that Senator Specter was very conscious of the fact that he is going to be running next year in a primary against a very conservative Republican named Stephen Friend, who is the arch anti-abortion person in Pennsylvania, and that he is very cognizant of that. He wants to keep the White House out of that race, and therefore he took up the cudgel as Clarence Thomas's supporters. One of his staff members was very unhappy with his reversing his usual role and decided that she'd take care of that.
Now, you said when you were listing all those who are targeted by some women's groups that you didn't have Arlen Specter on your list.
No, there isn't a challenger that I know of any worth. And in addition to that...
how about the Democrat running against him?
There's just, you know, what we're doing now is
why
looking
you just
at primaries.
Automatically support the Democrat that's running against them.
I don't even know who that is. I mean, I can't remember who it is. It's just not a very
this woman did that to Arlen Specter on his staff. I hope she really is censured for this, because this kind of disloyalty is what starts horrible, divisive problems for this country. What is the matter with people that you have to resort to this?
I tell you, Cornelia, I wouldn't worry about it. I doubt very much whether that's the case.
Let's move on. Donna, the charge has been made. You've heard the response. We now move on to just an objective caller by the name of Donna.
Yes, my comment, in the first place, I think Grace's explanation of that last charge is very much more sensible than thinking a Democrat leaked it. But anyway, my comment is, regardless of which side you come out on, whether for Clarence Thomas, for Anita Hill, against the Senate, against the president, or just disgusted with the whole thing, the one thing that has become perfectly clear in this process is that the Senate has to become more representative of the real people in this country, and by that I mean women and African Americans, and I think Carol Moseley Braun would be a wonderful candidate to defeat Alan Dixon.
Did you vote?
And any Republican that runs against
Can I ask you a question? Did you vote for Lynn Martin, or did you vote for Paul Simon in Illinois?
I did not vote for Lynn Martin because I don't think Lynn Martin was a very good representative of the real issues
of women.
So the answer
is, can you acknowledge that when you're talking about women, and I wish that you would just be candid about it, when you're talking about women, why don't you just say progressive women?
All right, I will. The other thing that isn't very dominant in the U.S. Senate is progressives of either male sex. I would agree. We need more progressives in the Senate, both men and women.
All right, good. Then why don't we just say that?
That's right. Now the caller has come clean. The use of generic word woman, of course, to liberals means their brand. As a matter of fact, that is the most misleading thing of all, because generally it was sort of like the youth vote in 1972, which would come out favoring McGovern. The youth vote came out in favor of Richard Nixon.
All right,
so,
and
consequently,
and
I don't want to give the impression, frankly, that I think that Lynn is not reasonably progressive. I think one of the things that I had against Lynn was the fact that she had more loyalty to the president and was more ambitious for herself than she was to the people of Illinois.
Absolutely.
Whereas Claudine Schneider in Rhode Island, a Republican, I would have supported, I would have voted for if I were living there, against a Democrat. Yes, I did give her money.
Good.
Because
put
I think she was the kind of Republican I want to see.
I think one thing that is very clear, based on some things that Bruce Crosby said this evening, based on a defensive response to one of those comments by Cornelia Tewitt, and by comments that Tom has made and callers have made and Grace has made, is that one of the lessons learned is that whether you're black or you're white or you're gay or you're straight or you're African-American or you're Hispanic or Filipino or whatever it is, when you're talking politics, it comes down to one thing. You're either a liberal or you're a conservative. When you cut through the core, and liberals or conservatives, or depending on how you look at a particular issue, you look at a glass of water. To some people, it's half filled. To some people, it's half empty.
And
to put all these other hyphenated things, whether it's black or women, in front of it is baloney.
And
it's
to
not
say
true,
but to say that someone is a liberal would say that she or he is a liberal on all issues, and I have told you repeatedly, I don't fit that stereotype.
Well, I'm talking about when we define groups. Bruce made a comment about white women's groups. Well, not all white women's groups.
The Eagle Forum does not.
That's right. And not all women.
And that is a white woman's group.
And not all women's groups. I think the perception is that women's groups are progressive. There are some that are progressive, some are not.
Concerned Women of America is hardly progressive.
Well, the Schomburg Republican Club, Women's Republican Club,
and the Eagle Forum, I must say, is not progressive at all.
Let's move on, Bob. Bob, are you in a car?
Yes, I sure am.
You're also on Inside Politics. Don't get in an accident.
No, I'll try not to, but I'll tell you what, I'm fuming from just the reason that you said. I am tired over the past 2 days of these whining women and blacks, not all of them, but the whining liberal women and the whining liberal blacks saying this would have never happened if Congress had more women or if Congress had more blacks. Well, if more women and more blacks ran on platforms that the majority of the American people agreed with, then they would be in the Congress. Second, I'm sick and tired of everybody complaining about how Reagan, Bush, and you notice when they talk about administrations, it's not the Bush administration, it's not the Reagan, it's the Reagan-Bush administration.
Because it's been two administrations.
I'm tired of that they're stacking the deck in favor of their philosophy. Well, what do you think they were elected for? If Dukakis was elected, he would have stacked the deck in favor of his philosophy. But obviously, the majority of the American people did not agree with the philosophy of Dukakis. So we have every right to stack the deck any way he wants. He's the president, and he was elected to do that.
Yeah, but he was not elected to govern this nation all by himself. He was elected, and we have both an executive and a congressional arm, a legislative arm.
For this civic
and
lesson, Bruce.
Listen,
do you mind if I finish,
Mr. Roser? The point really is, and Mr. Bush has had his own way very, very clearly because we have not been able to override his veto, which incidentally will change on the gag rule, but this is the way the government goes. Now, I think one of the problems is that half the people in this country don't vote, and those who do vote don't stop to think of the ramifications of their vote. When they cast a vote for Mr. Reagan and for Mr. Bush, they didn't stop to think of the Supreme Court, even though they talked about it constantly.
Wait a minute. Just a moment, Bob. How do you know, because the Democrats in 1988 made such a strong point about the Supreme Court nominee, how do you sit there so sanctimoniously say that the American people didn't know about, maybe they knew about it?
I didn't
about
say
it,
no.
Choice.
That isn't what I said. I said they don't think about that isn't their number one issue. And
how
does anybody
not
know what their issue is? But they've come back and they've said so.
If I may speak, Bruce.
Go ahead.
Finally.
I'll moderate it so that
go
I can.
Go ahead.
The whole thing is that if Mr. Dukakis and Mr. Mondale made one thing clear, it was Mr. Mondale saying it was going to be Jerry Falwell's court. He pounded that over and over again. Dukakis did the same thing. This was a judgment based largely, I think it's fair to say, if you can take the rhetoric of the Supreme Court, based largely on the kind of court it is. So
on the issue of more blacks in the Senate, there could be more blacks in the Senate if you could get the whites in the Senate want to support statehood for D.C. That would give blacks an opportunity to get elected from a black majority state.
Should blacks be in the Senate?
The whole issue
of
campaign financing makes this whole issue of running for the United States Senate an issue of big money. It's a big money election. And for the Democrats who control lots of states won't support a black statewide.
As I told you, I support a black woman for the Senate.
Did you support Roland Burris in the 1984 Democratic primary?
No, I did not.
Okay, you supported Paul Simon.
That's right.
Go ahead, Bob.
And that's an example.
I don't know
that's a good example of what we're talking about. That was a great opportunity for the white liberals to stand up and to put a black man in the Senate. And they chose to go with Paul Simon, who had an outstanding candidate
Bruce,
like Roland Burris.
I would have taken Roland Burris for my candidate for governor last year, but he chose not to run.
About the United States.
It doesn't make any difference. I'm saying...
When you had the opportunity, Grace, you and your white liberal friends chose Paul Simon.
It had absolutely nothing to do with the color of the man's skin, and you're paranoid if you think it did.
No, it's an all-white male Senate, but it don't have anything to do when you want to put another white man in the Senate.
Down. Bob,
yes,
last
please.
Word to you, because you're going to drive off the road.
Sam, listen, one more thing. The National Organization for Women down in, what is it, Florida or Georgia? Did you discuss that? They're going to start their own party now?
I think they should.
I think it's time that women start their own party. I think it's as power should go to a separate party controlled by them. I think it would be wonderful, and I urge them to do it. I urge Bill Abza to be the first candidate.
Bob, thanks very much. Bob, thank you very much. We move on to Louis.
Hi, Bruce. Great program.
Thank you.
Maybe I'm totally out on left field, okay, but I got to make a comment on this Thomas thing. When Thomas was being debated, like everybody's saying, you know, that he should be debated on his merits, and the Senate did the hearings and everybody was ready to vote on it, he had the nomination won. The head counters were saying that he had upwards of 60, 65 votes. At that time, the Democrats decided that they didn't want to play the game according to those rules anymore, so they leaked the sexual harassment type of thing. And the reason behind it, in my little minuscule view is that they finally realized that here was a black, that was a black conservative that was going to be put in the court by a Republican administration. And the exposure that he got really ran against the established black typical groups that have been professing that they're the ones that are leading the blacks in this country.
They're all lock, stock, and barrel by the Democrats.
And what we—that's right—and what we saw, during the process in the Senate was a number of both women and male blacks that were highly educated and they were highly sophisticated, and they do not buy the Democratic garbage that has been being preached for the past 30 years. And I think that scares the hell out of the Democrats.
You know
that the Republicans might be able to split the black vote.
One of the things, caller, that a lot of people didn't pay attention to, but the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, following the first set of confirmation hearings, came out and endorsed Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes, and the media played that down real low. The support for Thomas in the black community was something that was played real low.
That's right.
And what you had is you had organizations like PUSH and the NAACP who are actually controlled by the Democratic Party, who jumped to the Democratic Party's tune, coming out against Thomas for the Democrats.
I don't know who the gentleman was that you spoke, but
Bruce Crosby.
I'm with him. I mean, I really believe that.
Cornelia.
My view, in terms of the where I'm shaking my head no here is on the Democratic Party controlling.
We missed that on camera.
I'm sorry. Yes. I'll rattle around on the microphone here. The next time, I don't know. I'll bring a skull and crossbones or something. Skull and bones. But at any rate, my view is that there is an articulated position of the NAACP. Thurgood Marshall had been very instrumental in creating and developing the great success of the NAACP. There is a black view which happens to be liberal, just as there is a black view which happens to be conservative held by other people. But what I dislike about your thinking, Bruce Crosby, right, and this guy sitting next to me, is that it is
the
so...
I didn't even know. There you go again.
I never noticed. I thought you were Joyce's brother. What do I know?
Just like Bush. You never noticed.
But wait a minute. That you can't be categorical in your thinking. Everybody has a right, regardless of sex or race, to be themselves.
That's right.
We've got to stop all of this sort of slanderous,
a compartmentalization.
Right. We are denied our individuality.
Yeah, well,
and that's
what rich attorneys can say that, but those of us who live down on the ground with everybody else,
I am a white woman who had to work real hard to get to be a lawyer, and I was always the bottom of the totem pole.
Those of us who live down here on the ground, we know better.
Folks.
All right. If you look at what the NAACP did, it was counter to the sentiment in the overall black community.
Folks.
The overall black community.
Nobody knows the overall black community.
Hold it. Sarah Weddington, the lawyer who argued Roe v. Wade, predicted earlier this week that the landmark 1973 case legalizing abortion will be overturned within 2 years as a result of the confirmation of Judge Clarence Thomas to the United States Supreme Court. Do you agree with that assessment? Yes or no, Tom Roser?
Now I do.
Bruce Crosby. Cornelia.
I know.
Time is running.
She's thinking.
I know.
She's a lawyer.
I'm thinking.
First of all, what's your fiduciary responsibility here?
I have none.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I think it will be eviscerated first.
Right. What does that mean?
It'll be further eroded.
But what people fail to remember, though, is that it goes back to the states. It doesn't end it. It goes back to the states where the battle starts.
Well, not if natural law Thomas has his way.
The Senate narrowly sustained President Bush's veto of legislation that would have given jobless Americans up to 20 weeks of additional unemployment benefits. The vote was upheld 65-35, two votes short of the two-thirds needed, stretching the president's streak of successes and showdowns with Congress to 23 straight since he took office. Do you believe, yes or no, this will be a significant issue in 1992 race?
Yes, and he will be overridden on the gag rule.
Bruce.
Yes, but I'd like to know how many Democrats didn't vote to override.
Cornelia.
Yes.
Everyone voted to override, and 8 Republicans voted to override.
It will not be
override.
An issue because the Democrats have failed again to override a very significant thing which belongs on the bread and butter side of this. They are a very weak party. Mitchell ought to go. Yeah,
we move on to Kevin. Go on. You're on the air.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
I hope to be the first caller or speaker that will say something that everyone will agree with. What I got out of this weekend, and I can't speak for everybody, but a lot of people have said the same thing. What I got out of this weekend was the clear understanding that not one senator, Republican or Democrat, was in the least bit interested in finding out the truth when they went into that second round of hearings. And I thought that was crystal clear. And that...
How could they?
I don't...
How could they find the truth out?
What? They weren't even interested. I'm not asking...
Well, how would you have found
it? Wait. I don't know the mechanics. I don't want to speak to the validity of Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill. Irrelevant.
You know, I agree with them. Let the lawyer speak here, but statute of limitations was created for a certain purpose.
Not one of them said...
Kevin?
You know what, guys? There's no way we're going to find
Kevin, you're right.
Kevin? Kevin?
Can I say one more thing?
You can, but I'm going to say something first. Okay? Because I paid for these microphones.
It's your show.
Now, here's the thing.
Mr. Green?
I think, and again, I may be, as soon as I say the name, I'm going to probably be just attacked when I say it.
No.
I think that Senator Howell Heflin wanted to know the truth.
I think he's the only one.
Why?
Because the way and the manner and the questions he asked, I think he was one person who was legitimately searching for a truth. That doesn't mean he might have already made up his mind. I think he came across as the one and only person on that panel who really was seeking truth. Now, does anyone want to make any comment about my assessment?
I don't agree with it.
Kevin?
Can I make one other truth?
Yes.
Okay, it's about the old white boys club. Okay, I'm a white male. And I tell you what, you're right on all you said. It's a bunch of white males that take care of their own.
Absolutely.
Okay, and they got their butts together, and they take care of old Ted Kennedy before those hearings began.
We are out of time on that note, and we will discuss Ted Kennedy on some future broadcast. Cornelia Tewitt, Bruce Crosby, Grace Kamikowitz, and Tom Roser have joined us this week on Inside Politics. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us. This program came to you from Chicago. So long, everybody.